This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. Podcast on a game day for the Vancouver Canucks coming to you from United Center in Chicago. Jeff Patterson of TSN 1040, Jason Botcher of the Province. The podcast, as always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam, proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, by all means, we encourage you to start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. If you want to walk the showroom floor and the lot, check them out two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway in Coquitlam. You all good over there? A little scare with the lost phone for a moment?
Well, I didn't. I just misplaced it for a couple of minutes. That's not really a lost phone. No, I'm good, ready to go. I'm still feeling the reverberations of the trip to Vegas, though. It took a lot out of me. So I'm excited to see a winnable game for the Canucks. That was not. This does feel like they could win.
Yeah, how the mighty have fallen. The Hawks eliminated from the playoffs now, basically in the same rut the Canucks are. So I do think on paper, it is a winnable game. We'll get around to that in a sec, but we do have some things that we got to catch up on because you and I came from Vegas, flew in yesterday on a flight that seemed like it was never going to end. I was buried at the back of the plane. You at least had, sort of mid-span somewhere. I walked past you as I made my way all the way to the back of the flight.
Believe me, there was nothing great going on my side of the plane. I was with two, I was in the middle seat, two women on either side, both in sunglasses, and both like wickedly hungover, smelling like gin. So it was not, there was nothing fun, believe me, happening at the front of the bus on that flight.
Should have saved me a seat. That sounds great. I got to say, and we saw this the other day in Vegas, the morning skate. And I get people that ask me this a fair bit, like, you know, when the Canucks are on the road, hey, can I come to a morning skate? Generally, the answer is no, unless you can sweet talk your way into a building. But in Vegas, I don't know if it was Boston Pizza or somebody had run this contest and brought a bunch of winners. There were a couple hundred people in the seats at T-Mobile for the morning skate. And quite frankly, I was a little embarrassed because as they came in, you and I were just standing there, sitting, watching, waiting for the Canucks to start. And like one by one, they filed by and they all told us how much they love the podcast. Like, I was embarrassed. People were just showering us with, like, honestly, I was like, okay, enough. Like, we enjoy doing it. It's fun. But like, I don't know. I found it was a little awkward almost.
No, well, I mean, but if it's praise, I tend to think bring it on. If you have criticism, keep it to yourself. I don't need, just like the Canucks don't need your negative vibes. I don't need the negative vibes. So I was actually enjoying the praise. And I thought, like, it was, at first when I saw them streaming, I thought, you know, like, this isn't a fun place to be. It's not a great game day skate. You know, they're not going to be strategizing the power play. They aren't even skating lines. It's a Swedish holiday. Generally the Swedes don't even take the option on the optionals. But man, those guys, like, I kept thinking, like, if I was a fan, I would love this. Cause they got to, like, one lady got to go onto the bench and throw pucks onto the ice. They got to interact with the players. Like, Travis Green walks up and he's like signing stuff and taking photos and like talking to the fans. It was a pretty loose format. And I'm not sure the Boston Pizza winners knew what they were going to get out of it. But I did think watching it, like, fuck, this is a great trip. Like, not only do you get to go and hang out with the team and on the bench and interact with Travis, but you're in Vegas for the weekend. And it's like, it is an awesome, like, it's an incredible setup that they, like, I used to come to concerts in Vegas, you know, at the arena, and it's Thomas Mack. It's way off the strip. This is right in the big square, and it's right in the thick of the action. It couldn't be in a better spot, and the fucking atmosphere is bananas. Like, it reminds me, I was totally taken aback by the whole thing, and the closest comparison that I have is the Boston Bruins in the that Boston Garden in the Cup Final. Like, that's as close to Thunderdome-esque as a Vegas arena is, and they're playing the worst team in the league, and it's a Tuesday. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like there on a weekend in a playoff game.
Look, I have thoroughly enjoyed my first year traveling around and seeing the sights and checking out all these other buildings and other cities, and we've had fun sort of podcasting and telling some stories along the way. I have to say, the Vegas experience, though, watching you go through the Vegas experience, because I was there the first time and Kuz was on that trip, but to watch you sort of curl up in a little ball in the warm-up because the music was too loud, like... This is a guy, as you say, like, you go all over North America looking for fish concerts, and you were just, like, you were cowering in the corner.
But that, come on. Like, that was, yeah, if I'm drunk or if I'm a fan and I'm partying and I'm having a good time, it all would have been fine. But I'm not. I'm there to, like, you see my days. They're a grind. They're hellacious. It's like 10:30 a.m. to 1 in the morning, and I've got to, you know, come up with things that other people aren't thinking about or haven't done. And, like, I'm at my wit's end here. Like, I'm at the end of the season. I'm almost out of ideas. And I'm trying to come up with something to write about. And it is, you got to admit, like, it's beyond loud. Like, it's, like, the bass, my lung is shaking inside of my chest from the bass of the music. Like, it is freaking loud. Like, it is crazy loud. Like, so loud, I stood up and I was screaming, I can't fucking believe how loud it is in here. And the only guy out of all, like, there's an entire press row of people. I am screaming, I'm complaining I can't write, I'm screaming, and the one person that can hear me is you, and that's only because you're a foot and a half beside me. No one else. Like, I'm Mac two seats over, he didn't even look up, he couldn't even hear me. And I'm screaming as loud as I could that it's fucking too loud and I can't concentrate, I can't write. So, no, if I'm having a great time and it's the summer and I'm going to a concert or I'm seeing the sporting event, yeah, I want to be there. If it's during the hockey season and I'm working, give me Phoenix. Give me Arizona. Give me, like, no one's in the crowd. It's deathly quiet and it's fantastic. I cannot... Like, I feel that you didn't prep me for what it was going to be like in there. And you got to admit, like, it was, like, the music there is on a decibel level that's bonkers. It's not acceptable, is it? Like, how can it be acceptable? Much.
Take it up with the commish next time you see him. The music's too loud in Vegas. But no, I mean, your point is well taken, because when I was in there the first time, it was a Friday night, and I just kind of thought, all right, like, is this a Friday night? Every night's a Friday in Vegas, but is this the Friday night experience at a Golden Knights game? And you're right, a Tuesday night against a team that's in the crapper, like, what's it going to be like in 3 weeks? That first playoff game, like, if you thought that was a 12 out of 10 in terms of game presentation and the experience, that first playoff game in that rink, it's going to be insane.
Yeah, I would want to go and not to work. I would not want any part of that series to work because of the challenges. But I would love, as a hockey fan, I would love to be here or there in Vegas for that opening night of the playoffs. Probably it's usually a Thursday night. Like, it's going to be one of the sporting events to behold of the entire calendar year. Like, it's going to be that much fun. And Godspeed to any team that thinks that they're going to go in there and win. I wanted, you know, I think Travis was asking us if we were gambling. And I did want to gamble on Vegas in the first round of the playoffs.
You didn't want to put a few bucks on the Golden Knights? Yeah, Travis, we gamble. We just laid the house on the Golden Knights tonight.
Right. That did look like a sure bet. It was Vegas. It was Vegas by a goal and a half, and it was like low juice. Like, it was -105. So I did consider dropping that line on Travis, but I thought better of it.
Why was he so interested, though, in whether we were gambling? Like, that just seemed like a strange... I know we were in Vegas, but that seemed like an odd question.
I think he'd rather talk about us than the team, personally, right now.
It's
It's been tough. Like I think it's tough for everyone right now. I think it's tough for the fans in Vancouver. It's been a really bleak, disheartening run. It's been the worst. Like we thought the year before was bad. Then last year we all said it can't get any worse. It got worse. Like it's worse this year than any of the past ones where they've collapsed at the end of the year. Now it's four of the past 5 years that the same scenario has happened at the end of the season. And it's got worse every time. And it's hard on the fans. It's hard on me and like us, like the guys that are like in kind of embedded in on the beat and covering the team. And I think it's hard on Travis. And I think that for the first time this season, you saw it after the game. And you've talked about, I wrote about the big sigh. And also when like Murph asked him about frustration. And I think that really that's the first time that he's copped to the fact that this is a really, like generally before this point, we've said, like, how's the losing been? Is it grading on you? Is it grading on the players? And mostly the answer has been, no, we're in the NHL. We have the greatest jobs. We have a dream jobs. It's the most incredible place to be. And for the first time, he said, no, it is frustrating. It's frustrating on those players, and I can understand why. And I think we can all understand why, because we've been talking about the losing since December. Since everything fell apart on December 5th, and Horvat broke that bone in his ankle foot, the team has been on a swirl down the toilet, and they have not recovered. They've been tipped over and haven't regained their balance since then. And it's ugly. It's hard to watch on some nights. And for sure, that game against Vegas, it was really hard to watch. And all of the problems that have plagued the Canucks were on display in that game. Like the early goals against, the sloppy defensive play, the poor back checking, the poor defensive play. Like everything that is wrong about the team, it was encapsulated in that one game against the Knights.
The sigh was something else. Like if people haven't heard it, go back, find the on 1040's website, you can go back to the post game, whatever the case. Like that's good. That might be the sound of the season when all is said and done and the end is near. But like I can't even begin to replicate it. I was practicing. I was trying in my hotel room. I don't know. Like, I don't know where that came from, but that was like a season's worth of frustration summed up in one gigantic sigh, and that was how he opened his media availability after the game. I can't even remember what the leading question was, but you know that game felt like so many others that we have seen. Like the San Jose game at home stood alone because they scored some goals, but this was right back into this rut that they've been in. That last road trip that I had to endure, the three games without a single goal scored, and you know, for 45 minutes, it looked like it was going to be another shutout loss in Vegas before Brandon Sutter came through and was able to stuff a puck home. But, I mean, yeah, just that sigh, that's a sound that is now stuck. It's like etched in the back of my mind.
No, and I think that is I wrote about the time, but it kind of captured to me how I view the Vancouver hockey market right now and how fans and media and everyone feels about the hockey team, a long, exhausting, dispiriting, soul-crushing sigh. Like that it does capture everything you need to capture about the team, and it did feel similar to like a lot of losses. And you know, we're out there trying to find different angles, different ways to go at the team. And people were joking, well, Markstrom's going to say this after. I didn't even want to talk to Markstrom. Like I saw the Canucks PR the Canucks PR was out there briefing him on prepping him on, you know, what he's going to say next to the media. I know what he's going to say. I've talked to him. It feels like 1,000 times this year after games like that. I don't need to hear him taking the responsibility for another loss and how he needs to be better. I've just seen it too many times. Like I'm ready. I'm honestly ready for this season to end. And 9 games left. There's the end is in sight. Like the end is there. So I think for us it can't come soon enough. I think for the Sedins it can't come soon enough. I think for Green it can't come soon enough. Like they need an off season to regroup. They need an off season to rethink the team. And please, God help us all. Like do not come back with the. Someone was sending me like next year's lineup and. You know, how's it going to work if the Sedins are back and they had the Sedins with Erickson and they had Berchi with Horvat and Besser, and they had Sutter with Granlund, and I can't, like, I was like, please fucking God, like, do not come back with this same team again next year. Like, shake it up.
Wait a second. So somebody sent you, like, they put some thought, that's this year's lineup.
I know, it was exactly the same. And I had this meltdown in my head. Like, I had to back away from the screen, and I was like going, God help me. Like, this is not going to happen, is it? Like, I was really, I can't do it. I can't do this same squad again. I can't do it. And his suggestion is that if the Sedins come back, it's going to be the same team. And I'm like, we can all be smarter than this. We can all be better than this. Jim can be better. Trevor can be better. And if Jim does end up, like, I'm not, like, I think it's been so bad. I think that honestly, they need to have a long think when the season is over and how this management front office is going to be put together and is going to be framed and is going to be sold again. I remember when Jim got his extension and you know, one of the questions presented was, are you going to stick with the same front office group? And they can't, like, they have to make a change there. I don't care what it is, make a change there. And then the lineup, it's got to be different. And do whatever you can. If you have to trade Berchi, trade Berchi. If you have to trade Eriksson, trade Eriksson. If you can find a dance partner for Sutter, look into that. But you've got to shake up the foundation of this group, this core, because there's rot in there. There's rot mold that's been growing there for a while. And, you know, like, even when it comes to the Sedins, I think it's a complex layer. Like, I don't have an easy answer. I don't have the answer. I don't know. I don't even have an opinion on whether the Sedins should come back. I don't know if they should come back or not. I don't. I've seen arguments on both sides, and I'm totally torn. I just know one thing. Like, that lineup that guy tweeted me, that cannot fucking be the lineup. They've got to do whatever they can to make dramatic changes to the team, to shake things up. And by changes, I'm talking about that veteran group, the defense, the Sutter, Gagne, Delzato, Eriksson, Quad. Like, that's got to change. Like, there's got to be dramatic changes before I see this team again in September.
I hope you'll publish that list in the Provies, because now I'm intrigued. Like, some guy's spending time pouring over the roster. It just sounds like he took Game 12's lineup from this season and sent it to you.
Leipzig there. I think it was Granlund, Sutter, and Leipzig. Oh, okay. And Archibald made the fourth line. Gagne was centering the fourth line. And Vertanen was on the other side of the fourth line. And Gontz was his 13th. And I'm like, all I kept thinking was, God, no. God, no. God, no. Don't do it. Please. Don't let this be a thing. And I would like to present that. I'd honestly like to show Jim that guy's lineup for next year and say, like, look at this, man. Look what you've done. Like, do better. Like, do changes. Make sure that this doesn't happen. I can't deal with it. The Vancouver hockey market can't deal with it. I don't think the players want to deal with it again. Like, I honestly, there's too many misfits, you know? Like, Eriksson doesn't fit. Like, I was asking you, you know, after that long flight yesterday, one of my thoughts with, I'm always trying to come up with something I can write about, right? But, like, who have the city? Like, when this season ends and we look back on it, and I pose the question, like, who is the city's line mate this year? Like, who was it? Who was it? And I had no answer. You had no answer. I had to go back and look. And just by a minute at even strength, the city's most common line mate has been Louis Eriksson. And, like, a minute or two behind him is Jake Virtanen. That's a pretty brutal, like, that may be the worst couple of main line mates that those guys have had since, you know, I've been covering the team in 2005. Like, those guys, you know, what was Eriksson on a 14-goal pace? Jake's on a 12-goal pace. Like, that's pretty brutal to pin those guys with over the course of a season. And a lot of people are going to criticize. Like, I think Eriksson, actually, the Eriksson signing has done more to accelerate the end of the Sedins maybe than anything else, because he's been a terrible fit. He's got no shot, and he's slow. And I think he's been their most common line mate over the both years that he's been with the Canucks.
I guess I'm not surprised, ultimately. I mean, through my head, I'm thinking, you know, of late, Gagne's been given a chance there. Boucher started
the game. I don't think Gagne, it's not... don't even get me, like, Gagne's not been given a shot there. Gagne has been, like, parts of games been given a shot there. He had one game against the San Jose, and he was good. He was fine. Like, there's nothing wrong, I don't think. Like, if Gagne's really coming back, like, why not give the guy, like, he's wanted to play, I'm telling you right now, he has wanted to play with the Sedins since it became the story on the first day of training camp. He has wanted this. He was on a fourth line all last year. He came to Vancouver hoping to play up in the lineup. The first day in camp, it's almost unfair. He gets a chance to play with the Sedins, and he's like, this fits me. You know, the way they give and go and the way they make plays along the boards, like, this is what I want. And it was the rug got pulled out of him. He did not get another opportunity to play with the Sedins until Saturday. Until Saturday. So he's not happy about that. I don't think the Sedins are happy with the line mates they've had. No one's happy with the kind of production and how it's tailed off for them. No one's happy that Gagne's gone 24, 25 games without a goal. So why not the last 9 games say, Gagne, play with the Twins, see what you can do, see if you can get some kind of confidence heading into next year.
You pointed it out in the Provies the other night, and we talked about it in between whistles. You yelled at me. I could sort of barely hear what you were saying. But the Henrik pass that led to the Edler penalty was so out of character again. Like, he missed by 6 or 8 feet, the wrong side of the guy that he was trying to pass to. Like, neither Henrik nor Daniel right now even resembles, like, the guys that have carried this hockey club for the last decade. And whether, you know, it's in body language on the ice, the plays that they're making, these are guys who have created off the cycle. I mean, that's been their bread and butter forever. And some of it's probably the line mates they're playing with. But, like, I just don't even see them trying to initiate the cycle anymore. Like, their shifts are, I don't know. Like, it's hard to describe their shifts these days. But there's a reason why Henrik's gone 8 without a point and Daniel's gone 8 without a goal. Because I don't want to say they've given up, because I would never hang that on the Twins. But, man, I don't know. It's hard to watch them right now.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, I don't have an answer. Like, I don't know what's right. I don't know what the right call is to make. I know, I think it feels like the end. It feels like this is it. It feels like this is the first time all season I have felt more they're not coming back than they are. I don't think that they have the stomach to go through this again. Part of it is that another thing I pointed out the other day was that they're 10th and 11th among the forwards, 18th and 19th on the team, and even strength by ice time. So they're not getting opportunities to even play. And these are great, proud players. These are Hall of Fame type guys. These are guys that have had amazing careers. And when I was on with Brough and Halford, I said, my best memories, I'm telling you, like, on my deathbed, I will say, like, my best memories, I know this, ever watching hockey, will be watching those two guys play, watching them dominate along the boards, watching them play give and go and peel off checks and own guys, like, you know, 30 pounds heavier than them, score the, you know, most gorgeous picture frame goals you could imagine, and not doing it with amazing shots, not doing it with incredible physicality, not doing it with speed, doing it with, like, dangle, doing it with incredible puck skills and smarts and being able to be 3 steps ahead of everyone. Like, those will be my memories. This, what I'm seeing right now, is nowhere near what that was. And it's hard for me. It's hard for you to watch. I think it's hard for the fans to watch. I think it's even harder for them to go through. And I think that, you know, intellectually, they can work through this, that it's not going to be better next year, that they're not going to get more even strength ice time next year, that they're not going to get better line mates next year, that the team isn't going to be conceivably be much better next year. In fact, the most likely scenario is that we're sitting here again next March in the United Center or in Vegas or in Dallas, and we're talking about where it went wrong and where the season went sideways and why the Canucks aren't in playoff position. That's the most likely scenario. And I think at the end, when they go through the checklist of all the things, all the reasons why to come back and all the reasons why not to come back, the why nots are going to be longer than the whys, and I feel like they're not. I feel like they're not coming back. And I feel like that game, I think you were saying earlier, is April 5th at home. Like, I feel like that could be it. I think that there's a possibility that's there. Like, a strong, obviously, there's always been a possibility. I think it's likely now that there very well could be their last game in Vancouver as Canucks.
One of my takeaways here in this last, well, the seven-game rut, but it goes a lot deeper than that. What is it, one win in 11? And not that he needs me to feel sorry for him, but we talk about Travis Green having to face the media, and the same applies to the Twins, in my opinion. Like, you know, we've discussed this to death. Loyal soldiers, they're in there every night. They were the other night in Vegas as well. Like, if I'm running the organization, and the organization doesn't come to me and consult with me on things that, you know, it should do, but I'll offer some free advice. Like, we've seen this in the past, and I think Brian Burke was, you know, a master of it. You see right through it. It was transparent. But as a general manager, you know, he would try to take the heat off his coach and his players with some sort of distraction, come out, blame the refs, like, you know, do something, call a press conference, and just for a day at the very least. But, like, when was the last time anybody's seen or heard from Jim Benning or Trevor Linden? Like, I kind of feel like Travis Green has been left here on his own right now to mop up this mess.
Well, I do think that the management team made a mistake in deciding that this would be the year and this new contract with Sportsnet 650 would be the time to begin not speaking regularly to their fan base. And it was a tradition in Vancouver that goes all the way back to Burke and maybe beyond, but I know Burke wanted to do it. He wanted to control the message. He wanted to be out in front of things. And, you know, this is a topic that I've written about and I've talked about on here, but it became tradition for the Canucks executive to talk weekly. And I thought it was a really good way of being out in front of things, controlling the narratives, dictating storylines. They didn't all want to do it. Dave didn't want to do it. Mike didn't want to do it. Jim didn't want to do it when he started. They all did it. They talked every week. And they got some stipend for it, like 30 grand for the year, 40 grand for the year. No, Gillis gave his to charity. I don't know what happened to the rest, but it was a Vancouver tradition, and it was a good one, I thought, for all parties. And it was part of the my understanding is part of the rights holders contract with the radio. They negotiated it out of the deal, so now we don't hear regularly. On the rights holder station from Trevor and from Jim. And I think it has put Travis in a difficult spot that he's out there trying to defend the indefensible. Like, you can't, like, it's Bo Horvat playing with Leipzig and Goldobin to start the last game. People are all over Horvat. Leipzig is a rookie. Leipzig has 5 goals in 60 NHL games. Leipzig was a regular healthy or became a healthy scratch in Vegas, where when he was in the lineup, he was on a fourth line. Goldobin, I love Goldobin. I love his personality. I love, you know, some of his dangle and some of his shots and some of the plays that he can make. He's not an NHL player. Not now. I'm not sure he will be. He's just not. And that's your first line. Like, that's what Travis Green has to go with every night. That's the type of thing that he's got to roll with. The bigs on big, you know, and his shutdown line is Brandon Sutter, who's played 19 minutes last. Like, that's what you've armed him with. Like, I do agree. I think that Jim and Trevor should step up, and they should say that, you know what, like, we should be seeking out the media. We should be answering some questions here. And I'm not saying, like, do an interview with me or do an interview on 1040. Like, go on 650. Go where it's comfortable and go wherever, you know, pick whatever host you want to do. Like, but be out there and answer questions onto what's happening here. And, yeah, take some of the heat off Travis, who he's still figuring out the end. Like, this is his rookie season as an NHL head coach. He's in a really difficult spot because he's got a team that he's, even when they're all healthy, it's an undermanned squad. They don't have the horses that other teams have, even then, okay? And so when you look at the situation he's in, I think it would help if Jim or Trevor said, you know what, like, this is the week we're going to do a sit down with do it with Walker. Like, sit down with Walker for 2 hours on his round table and, like, and hash out the Canucks and you know, do it from a generalist point of view. However the hell you want to do it, just do it. And for a little while, take the heat off these guys.
Right. And I would go so far as, again, you know, unsolicited advice, but I'll throw it out there. You know, your best player, a guy that absolutely captured the fascination of a fan base and carried this hockey club for most of this season until he suffered what looked like a pretty serious injury. I'm talking about Brock Besser. And he's just disappeared. He's like, why wouldn't you at some point give him a little bit of time, but prop him up, let him know, let fans know, how's he doing? Like, you know, we haven't seen or heard from Brock Besser, and this team's got a policy of, you know, injured players generally aren't available to the media. But, you know, the storyline is going to continue to be, why can't this team score? Why can't this team win? Why can't this team have NHL-quality players? You've got one in Brock Besser, and I'm sure there is a massive section of the fan base that would love to know, how's he doing? Like, you know, how is the recovery going? What, you know, like, we haven't rehashed that incident. I don't know if he's in any hurry to do that. But again, I just think in a distraction, in some way to take the story from yet another loss and the fact that the team can't score, you know, you've got some options. Put some people up front here for a change, a diversion, do something differently.
Yeah, and we're on the road. Like, maybe they will. Maybe it'll happen in that last couple of weeks of the season, but yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, the others, Derek Dorsett came out, I remember a couple of times he was still hurt or recovering and he came out to talk to the media and became the story. And I, you know, obviously there's a ton of interest in Brock Besser. I would make the argument that he's the most important rookie this year in hockey, and he's the most important player, and a rookie player to any NHL team. And you've seen what's happened here without him, man. They are on a 7-game slide, and it's been as bleak as it's been at any point in the last 5 years because you pulled Brock Besser out of the lineup. And to me, right now, it feels worse than last year. I think the run of games post-trade deadline, they have a worse record right now than they did last year. Goal scoring looks harder than it was last year. So, you know, look, it's dark and people are like grasping onto things. That's why the Thatcher Demko story gets so much run and is talked about like almost daily. People are like gnashing their teeth over, you know, should Demko be on the team? But a part of that is people want to grab onto some kind of hope. And Besser could be that. I think Demko could be bad. I don't think the timing works out for Demko because he hasn't been playing really well lately. But it would be nice. It would be nice to hear. And something's going to come because Gaudette could be here this weekend. I mean, Gaudette could lose Saturday, and if his team loses, we could be seeing him Sunday in Dallas.
Podcast from Chicago, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. March is truck month. A couple of days left in the month of March. Get up to $11,000 total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for full details. Beauty of the podcast is we can decide the topics, and I know this has been bothering you this week, that nobody, and I do think it is nobody, has been talking about the fact that Ben Hutton's time in Vancouver could be done. His season very well may be over. He's not on this road trip. He's got an infected foot. I don't want to make light of that. I saw somebody had reached out to me and said they saw him at VGH getting, you know, going in for some treatment. So, you know, it sounds like it's fairly serious. Serious enough not to be on this trip and not joining the Canucks at any point of the road trip. They get back from the road. There's only 6 games to go. Who knows, given his status with this coach and this roster. Do you think we see Ben Hutton in a Canuck uniform again this season?
Well, I have seen some people suggest that the injury's, you know, not as bad as him not being on this road trip. But I did, like, the day before it was announced or it was revealed that he wouldn't be going on the trip, I saw he was limping. Like, he was limping around the locker room, like, for sure, pretty significantly, too. Like, enough that I noticed. So I do think, you know, I do think he's legitimately hurt. I don't think that they're keeping him away from the team because Travis wants to make him a healthy scratch. I don't buy into that at all. He's hurt. He's an infection in his foot. And And yeah, it's bothered me that it's like, I keep asking you every time that you do your radio hits, does anyone ask you about Ben Hutton? And every time you say, no one ever asked me about Ben Hutton. And I tune in as much as I can when I'm on the road to the different shows. I heard, that, you know, on 650 was mentioned, but like 35 minutes into their Canucks lunch. Like, hey, the question was sat through the, hey, has Hutton played? Like, to me, this seems like a rather dramatic issue for this team right now. 2 years ago, this is a guy who had 25 points in his season. It looked like everyone was talking about him potentially being a 30-point guy. Hell, he signed his contract the next year for $2.8 million for each of the next two seasons. And when Jim was asked, hey, dude, like, does this not look a little high? He said, oh, if he gets to 50, 60 points, it's going to look pretty good. 50, 60? People were talking about the possibility that this guy could be a 50, 60-point defenseman. Now he may have played his last game and no one, like, it's just like he's vanished from Vancouver. Like, no one cares. It, like, blows me away. At the beginning of the season, October and November, I'm not going to tell you he was great, but he was fine. Like, he was a legit NHL top four defenseman. All of his underlying data was really good, was encouraging. He was playing a lot. Like, Travis was playing him 22 minutes a game in the first 2 months of the season. He had faith in him. He was succeeding on the ice. He was controlling shot attempts. He was controlling scoring chances. He was good. He was good for the Canucks. He was fine overall, you know, in the league. He wasn't putting up points, but the team was scoring when he was on the ice at a pretty nice rate, at even strength. And then something happened. Like, there was a switch. Something happened in December. And by mid-December, the healthy scratches started. He's been healthy scratched 12 times. It was 45 games after that. So, like, that's a lot. Like, that's, you know, basically a quarter of his games. After that, at some point in December, he was a healthy scratch. And he got lost. He got inside his own head. They lost him. And when he did play, it wasn't 22 minutes a game. It was 15 minutes a game. Like, they've lost a player that had a lot of upside, that had a lot of potential. Like, something happened. It's draft and develop. They drafted the guy. He showed up. He was ready. He was good. Something has gone astray, askew. Something has gone wrong with the development part of the equation. This seems to me to be a critical issue for everyone in Vancouver should be talking about this. Because what does it mean for others? What has happened here? What's gone wrong? Like, we asked Travis about this the other day. He said his conditioning got worse over the course of the season. Are you fucking kidding me? His conditioning got worse? Like, I don't think that reflects well on any. It obviously doesn't reflect well on the player, if that's right. Doesn't reflect well on the staff. Doesn't reflect well on the people trying to get through to him. The people around him, the people in his camp, his agent, the team, the coach, everyone. They haven't got through to him. So something broke down, you know, and it's a critical issue. It's a critical issue for the rebuild. It's a critical issue for Yule Levy, who, guess what? I'm hearing the same things, conditioning issues. Not into it, not intense. Plays like he doesn't care sometimes. Well, fuck, I just heard all that same stuff about Ben Hutton. So I'm sorry, but alarm bells go off. And I cannot believe that this is not a major story in Vancouver. I cannot believe that there aren't entire, and I'm not criticizing anyone. Like, people can talk about whatever they want to talk about. I'm just saying, if I had a show and I was there, I would be talking about Ben Hutton for an hour a day, every day. Every day! I wouldn't stop! Every day.
The Ben Hutton Hour. I like it. I would tune in. It'll be interesting. I mean, his career could very well be at a crossroads, you know, 3 years into the National Hockey League. I don't know what Ben Hutton does in the off seasons. I'm not going to be there every step of the way. But I do wonder, like, you know, this guy is going to be 25 here soon. He has an opportunity, whether it's with the Canucks or if a move happens and he goes elsewhere. But it does feel like maybe he's going to have, you know, he needs to address his offseason and the way that he approaches all of this. Like, do you anticipate, if you're Ben Hutton, like, Do you think that there is a takeaway in all of this? Like when you're constantly hearing from your coach that it's your conditioning. Like, is it time? There's those camps. We see the BioSteel in Toronto, and you know, some of the biggest names in the National Hockey League are there. Like, would it not be a good investment of Ben Hutton's time and money to like get on one of those kinds of programs?
I'll tell you what Ben Hutton has to do. I'll tell you exactly. I could solve many of the Ben Hutton issues right now in a very easy way. He has to go on that Ryan Kessler program in that offseason where Kessler was famously in his garage. He was pounding 100 shots, 1,000 shots a day at the wall, hitting targets, and he came back and scored 40 goals. Ben Hutton, to succeed in the NHL, needs a shot. He needs a shot. That's all. His whole, I mean, obviously, I guess he has to bench press a bunch, too, because the coach says he's not strong enough. So bench press in the morning or shoot in the morning and bench press all afternoon. And that should be his offseason. He needs a shot. He was successful in a lot of ways. He's been successful in the past couple of years on the power play in terms of how the team generated shots and all of that. His shot is not good enough. He has to find, you know, like, Bo Horvat had to get faster, and he found the right coach, and he found the right thing, and he dedicated, you know, the first years of being a pro to getting faster, and he got faster. Ben Hutton needs to slap shot. He needs to find it. He needs to figure out a way how to get the right skills coach. I hear there's a good one in Delta. Go sign up with him and learn, spend the whole offseason getting a shot. I mean, he probably won't be back as a Canuck. Like, that seems to be the take that I hear most often, that it's unlikely that he's back. But if he gets a shot, he'll be good. He'll be a fine NHL defenseman for many years.
All right, but my cautionary tale comes from the story that I wrote a couple of years ago about the Tan Man went to Steven Stamkos' shooting coach. How'd that work out?
Come on. Can't compare. The Tan Man's a defensive shutdown. He's a totally different type of player. Ben Hutton, you've forgotten now because he only has 6 assists. He had 25 points in his, or 24 points in his rookie year. Like, this is supposed to be an offensive upside type guy. That he has a lot of instincts that would lend to that. He walks the line well. Like, he's actually good patrolling the point on the power play. Tanev has none of these instincts, okay? Like, none of this. Like, Chris Tanev, like, that's, no, it's absolutely incorrect. Like, Chris Tanev should not be working on a shot. It's a waste of time. He should be working on other things, like, you know, figuring out how he's going to block shots without getting hurt. Like, that's the type of stuff that he needs to work on. Hutton needs a slap shot. If Hutton gets a great shot, he has opportunity to succeed. Who's going to see, even if Tanev, like, let's say your argument works, right? He goes to Stamkos' shooting thing, and he has this amazing slap shot, okay? And then he comes back to camp. Guys, I've got an amazing, you know who else says that all the time? Gudbranson. Does any good Branson end up on any power play? Apparently has 103 mile per hour slap shot. No one wants to see good Branson on the power play. No one wants to see Chris Tanev on a power play. Anyone looking at Ben Hutton is going to say, you know what? We need him to produce points. He's not going to be a super physical guy. We need him. We need the points there. If he's going to be a bit soft, if he's going to play soft, we need points. If he's going to get points, he needs a shot.
Isn't that an indictment, though, of Stamkos' shooting coach? Like, Tanev comes in on the ground floor. Like, you would think you'd be able to get some sort of incremental improvement. No, come on.
It's DNA. It's not there. Like, it's like taking me or you and saying, we're going to give you guys a slap shot. Or, like no, it just doesn't happen. You know, like, can you speak French?
Very little.
Yeah, me too. And guess what? I spent like 8 years in fucking French class, and I can't communicate in French at all. I'm just never going to get a second language. Like, my mom wanted me to learn guitar. Like, she was like, we're signing you up for lessons. We're making you practice. I could spend 6 months, 8 hours a day trying to learn guitar from the world's experts. You could put 5 of them around me and they're teaching me all day long. I'm never going to get it. I'm never going to be able to play guitar. Chris Tanev is never going to get a shot. Like, just let it ride, you know? At some point in life, like, you have to realize what you are and what you're not. And he has to realize, like, he's not going to be the offensive power play guy, and he is just wasting time. Like, all of that time with Stamkos, the shooting coach, is a waste. he should have been, I don't know what, like, I don't have the right program for him, but I know the wrong program for him. And the wrong program is Chris Tanev learning a shot with Stamkos. Like, you can't honestly, with a straight face, to act surprised or to say, like, this looks bad on Stamkos's coach. Like, he's going to wear this as some big failure. He tried to take on Tanev, and it just didn't work. Like, that's completely unfair, man. He's just never going to have a shot.
Look, I've learned my lesson. Like, it was a running gag. We used to have fun with it for a few years back, where locker cleanout day, there was always the question to Tanev about, where do you want to improve your game? And he would, every year, say, I want to find a way to bring some offense. And then summer would roll around, and he'd come back for training camp. And that first day, we'd see him after training camp. How did summer go? What do you want to do this year? And he would say, I want to bring offense. And then the season would play out. And there'd be like, it was just the most vicious circle for about 3 years. I think we finally put that whole thing to bed now.
Yeah, I hope so. I want to hear... This year, what I want to hear is, like, you know, what do you want to do in the offseason? I would like to hear him say, like, look, I'm going to try to figure out what are there things I can do to try to stay healthy. A lot of these injuries have been fluke ones, but maybe there's some sports science I can figure out to help me with fatigue, to help me with certain things. I want him just in sports science. I want him to go to, like, the Nike lab or wherever, whatever labs he can go to in Portland or wherever, and just research sports science and do whatever he can to try to stay healthy. I don't want to hear him. I don't need to learn to play guitar. He doesn't need to learn offense.
How about, though, he stood in there last week. And again, we hadn't had a chance to talk to him for a while. He'd been out since that game in Tampa where he took the headman. I thought he blocked it with the back of his leg. I thought he had turned and took the full brunt of a headman slap shot in the back of the leg where it was exposed. But then he set me straight, and you were there. Headman's shot goes through his shin pad and breaks a bone in his foot. And as he's telling this amazing story, I'm having trouble, like, listening to the story because he's still missing six teeth. And, like, as he stands there, he's opening his mouth. And I'm just thinking to the last injury this guy's had. Like, it's been, what a season. He's had four separate injuries, the thumb, the groin, the teeth in Toronto, and now this broken leg in Tampa. And he's standing there telling the story about getting checked out by the Tampa doctor, who's, yeah, you're good to go. Get back out. He played 10 minutes that night on a broken leg.
He is, like, it was the image of, like, this is a brutal, tough league. Like, NHL is no joke. Like, he has had, you know, he's got had the mouth surgery, and he's still got basically recovering from that because his mouth is all fucked up still. He played on a broken leg, and not only did he not, like this is, like, he takes the shot. Okay, he takes a headman shot. Hedman had this big sweeping skate in, put all of his weight into it, would have loved a radar on that shot.
103.4, I think.
The puck goes through his shin pad, breaks his fibula. He goes in to see the doctor, and he says, I'm good. I want to go. The doctor looks at him, and I know, like, the doctor's, it's a super sensitive issue from Vancouver, and there have been a ton of injuries, like ridiculous historic injury levels the past three seasons for the Vancouver Canucks. But when he comes in and the doctor's, like, looking at him, do you feel pain here? Do you feel pain here? And he says, no, I'm good. I want to play. Like, at some point, it's on him. On some point, it is the player. Like, if he's saying I'm fine and the doctor's prodding him in all the different spots, I'm not sure what more, they look for tells and warning signs. And there was no reason in that particular instance to have an x-ray, because here is this guy on a broken leg saying, I'm fine, I'm good to go, put me back out there. So he put him back out there and he played the rest of the game. And he was like, it's legendary. Like, if the Canucks were any good and, like, that was an important win on the season, like, it would be the stuff of legends. We would talk about it forever. Like, the guy, that 10 minutes, you had the number there, 10 minutes he played on a freaking broken leg. Like, it's an incredible story, and it's another one that just, it got lost in the ether. Like, it was another wallpaper story in Vancouver that didn't get any run, but man, like, that's another guy that I would love to see on a good team in the playoffs, like, giving his all, you know, playing, like, going over, I'm not sure he'd survive four rounds. I would love to see him try. I'd love to see him, you know, be out there playing against the game's best. And unfortunately, he's not going to have, as it's set up right now, have a chance. Like, he's another guy I would like to see, like the Sedins. I would love if the Sedins were on a third line on, like, the Penguins, or a third line on Tampa, or some, like, stat team where they could sweep in there and be secondary scoring. And I'd really like to see Tanev on a second pairing on a team that had a chance to win playoff rounds, because the guy, he has heart, he has guts, he has everything that you'd want in a hockey player. And unfortunately, he's just never going to be, or not and then anytime soon, it seems, going to be able to show that on a big stage.
Doesn't have everything.
No.
There's a shot.
Those guys are loved. Those defensive defensemen, never do they shine more than in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, those are that's the time for them when you say, like, look how he's, like, you know, clearing the pot. Look at that first, like, we fell in love with Ham Hughes during the 11 run in the playoffs, and we're like, holy shit, like, this guy is incredible because of the little things he was doing. And that is the time of year when those little things become big things and they're spotlighted, you know, in the intermissions and whatnot over the course of a playoff series.
All right, speaking of time of year, help me out here, because mixed messages, and we've seen that a few times this season from the organization. We continually hear that these young guys, this is an opportunity. They're getting ice time. This is a chance. Make it happen. Yet it was almost 1 year ago to the day that Brock Besser debuted, played 9 games, scored 4 times, and we were told that those goals didn't mean anything. So is this an important stretch of the season, or is it garbage time?
It's not. And, like, I mean, I think it matters. I think that it should matter especially if a young player comes up and, you know, on some level, if Leipzig is really good in these final 9 games, it's going to matter. But generally, they know. Like, you can see how they're playing. They know that these are not. This is a team that you could make the case they're playing like they've given up. Like, it's really emotionally, it's really hard to be in an NHL game, to skate out there before the anthems, and to know that you really don't have a chance, to know that you're so undermanned that there are certain games where you look at it, you look at the matchup, and they don't have a hope. Like, they just don't, they're not good enough. They're not good, and that is super dispiriting, and it sucks the life out of you. But I do find it interesting that in September, Jim was saying these games are meaningless, and now Travis is pitching these games as, like, playoffs and intensity and import, and these are going to decide the decisions. Well, are they going to decide the decisions for next year? Because last year, Besser did get 4 goals in 9 games. He was really good. He made his line mates better. His lines played above. They kept their head above water in all of those games. They controlled shots. They had possession. Everything about him was great. And he's still, the idea in the summer, I heard, was that they wanted him, or were thinking he was going to start the season in Utica. And if he didn't get in enough fitness, or his fitness didn't reach certain levels, he hit those. He still didn't start the season with the team. He was a healthy scratch in the first 2, never forget.
So I look at some of these young guys. You've mentioned Leipzig a couple of times, came, you know, firing out of a cannon after the trade. He was, you know, billed as this energy guy, and he was, and he was productive the first couple of games. I still think he's shown some energy late in the game against San Jose the other night. He was making things happen, and they came close to tying that game. You know, I haven't had an issue necessarily, but he's been, as you've pointed out, I mean, he's been given every opportunity to play with Horvat, to play lots of minutes. So, you know, again, I think the jury is out on where he fits on a good National Hockey League team. And we saw that he couldn't crack the lineup in Vegas, and that's why he was expendable. But, you know, Tyler Motte back in Chicago, where it all started, like, I would expect to see an inspired performance from this guy, because I really haven't seen a whole lot from him. Darren Archibald, quite frankly, you know, for a guy that's playing for his spot in the National Hockey League, and I like his story and I like the guy, but make something happen. Like, you can't be invisible when you're that big and you play that role. And quite frankly, that's what's happened to him. So, little concern there. We've talked about Goldobin, in and out. There are flashes, but, like, of those young guys, Boucher is another guy, you know, terrible defensive play on, was the third goal the other night in Vegas. You know, he scored in 1 game in the National Hockey League this season. He had the 2 goals in Dallas, so maybe he's getting fired up about returning to Dallas on Sunday, but there's a game tonight and tomorrow night to worry about first. Like, of all of those guys, who stood out for the right or the wrong reasons to you?
Well, you talk about Archibald, and we saw that game in Vegas. We saw what Ryan Reeves was able to do. And there are Canucks defensemen who were running scared of him that game. Like, they were on the ice. They were looking out for him at all times. He was pounding. I think he had 6 hits in 10 minutes or something like that. And, like, 3 of them were impactful, big hits. Why can't Archibald do? I don't get why Archibald can't. Like, I want Archibald to succeed. I think that he did succeed early on. I think he showed he is more than capable of filling the role. But he's gone quiet. Like, that was a sitter for him. Vegas scored early, a couple goals in the first 5 minutes. They took a 3-0 lead. 3-0 in Vegas, super noisy. Guess what? It's Archibald. It's energy time. It's big hit time. It's Archibald time. Go do something. Go chase a hit. You got nothing to lose. The team is already down 3-0. Like, you heard Travis after the game. We weren't coming. He said we weren't coming back. We're down 3-0. We weren't coming back. We couldn't come back. We could not. He said that. We could not come back. Okay, you can't come back, so find another way to make an impact. You know, give up on a defensive assignment and go pound someone, man. Like, quiet the crowd down. Inspire the guys in your squad. Everyone's like, Delzato hits. Delzato, no one, like, Delzato, like, is any Delzato hit have an impact, like a lasting impact, like a holy shit moment? No, they don't. They don't have that. Maybe there's been a couple over the course of the entire year. But he's just not physically built as a guy who's going to go pound some dude into the wall and everyone's going to say, fucking rights. Archibald has that kind of ability. He has that kind of skill set. So I'm not sure why he's not doing it. Oh, wow, we got a game day skate here and the Sedins are taking it. This is not super common.
All business, because it was a travel day yesterday. They weren't on the ice. Given the state of affairs, maybe they had the closed-door meeting, the team meeting. Although I think that would drive Travis Green nuts if he wasn't invited to a team meeting. Like, he wasn't part of, let me in, I've got things to say. All right, we just want to wrap up with a couple of things. One is, I got to get to the bottom of this, because on game day in Vegas, we were in the seats. We talked about the pregame skate. And again, all those people, it's Vegas people. It's a game day skate. Get outside and enjoy Vegas. Like, of all the places to be at a game day skate.
They're fans. Like, I would really hesitate on criticizing any of them, because I think the people that showed up in Vegas, if I were the Canucks, I would reach out to all of them and I would say, like, here's a suite for a game next year. Like, you guys, like, those are the super fans. Those are the fans that are going to savor it the most when the Canucks are back, when the Canucks are relevant again, when the Canucks are a playoff team again. Those group of guys are going to be, or those, not just guys and men and women, all of them together are going to be the people that are going to say, like, look, we were there at the low point, at the lowest point. We went to Vegas and we supported our team. We showed up at the game day skate and now look where we are, man. We're not the bandwagon type. All of them, like, they all deserve gift packages and a suite for next year. And they all deserve nothing but love from any of us. Because those are the types of fans that we need, that the Canucks need, that Vancouver needs. Because they are willing to show up. And that game was hell for them. The Canucks were awful. The Canucks are out of it in 3 minutes. And they're all wearing, like, their Canucks capes. And they're all in their section with their Canucks jerseys. And let's go. And they try to Canucks go, go, go Canucks go chant during the game. And I kept thinking, like, man, like, those guys have heart. Those guys have moxie. So I will not let you, J-Pat, criticize those fans who skipped out on all the joys of Vegas to show up and watch this group of guys in a game day skate. Credit to them.
All right. Speaking of the joys of Vegas, that's where this was going, because we left the morning skate. You were asking me if I knew where you could get some food in Vegas. It's Vegas. You seem confused. Like, where can I?
No, like, that's not a bad question. I need a recommendation. You took me through New York, New York, and there was awful, awful choice after awful choice. Thankfully, I left your plan. I went back outside and I found, like, there's this amazing Bruxy's, I think, chicken and waffle place right beside T-Mobile Arena. It's awesome, man. Like, that, I'm not even a huge, I don't even like waffles. But I was eating fried chicken and waffles, and I couldn't get it. Like, I want to go back. and eat that again. So so do not mock. Like, yeah, you need recommendations in Vegas of where to eat. Of course, you didn't know that. Like, I'm telling you, next time, like, I am now taking on the role of recommending to you. Next time you go to Vegas, you go eat at Bruxy's, that chicken and waffle place, and you will love it, man. It's melting your mouth. It's amazing fried chicken too. Like, it's fucking good, man.
I wish you had told me that, because I ended up eating at, I'm in New York, I was staying there, and I'm thinking, New York, there's the deli, I'll go have a sandwich. I ended up getting the most obscene, not in taste, it's size, like, it was stupidly big, this sandwich. Like, I knew the minute I saw it that I didn't stand a chance of eating it. Like, it had no business being as big as it. Like, it's not a badge of honor to make the world's biggest sandwich when you know people aren't going to be able to eat it. So, like, I'm still full. And it wasn't great. And now I hear about this amazing chicken and waffles. And I don't think I've ever been to a Waffle House. So now, like, I'm pissed off and mad that you didn't. You're holding out on me because you knew this and I didn't. And I ended up eating the world's biggest sandwich. And I got through about 60% of it. And I don't like to waste food, but I knew there was no way I was going to eat this thing. Now I want to go back to get the chicken and waffles. So I am filing that one away, but let's finish with the best story of the week. And we'll come full circle because the week started with a trip to Vegas. We were supposed to be on the same flight. All of a sudden, I find out that you're not flying on my flight. What happened? Where did you go on the flight from YVR to Vegas? What happened?
Yeah, we were ready to go. They announced that they had oversold our flight that you and I were on by one. So they needed someone traveling alone who didn't have checked luggage to come and take a later flight. They were going to throw you on I think we were on at 1 o'clock. They were going to throw you on a 6 and get in at 9. And for doing that, for waiting an extra 5 hours, you were going to get $800 and not in vouchers, in cold, hard cash. So fucking right. I put up my hand and I do second guess it now because looking back, because we saw this go down in Columbus one day where they offered up like $500, then it went up to $800, then it went up to $1,200. No one was taking it, and it went up to like $2,000, right? We couldn't, that day we had to go to work, but I had time to kill. I wasn't going to go out in Vegas. I had to cover the game the next day. Those were 13, 14-hour days for me. So it was not like I had anything fun planned to do in Vegas. So I ran up there, maybe a little too early. Maybe I could have waited and got like $1,200. But I said, I'm in. I will take your $800 cash. I will take this later flight. Sign me up. And she said, no, well, what we have to do is we have to wait to make sure everyone shows up on this Vegas flight first. And if anyone doesn't show, we're going to throw you back on and you will not get your $800 in cold, hard cash. So I said, okay. So I sat down and waited. And then all you guys got on and you went and your flight was on the, you know, going out to the runway, and I was waving at the window at you, bon voyage. And I went up and was rubbing my hands together. I was saying, okay, let's go. So she starts typing in and she goes, oh, I'm sorry, when do you need to get in Vegas by? And I said, well, I need to get in Vegas by tonight. And she said, it's not going to happen. We can't get you on that later flight. We're actually going to have to fly you into LA. You're going to have to stay over in LA. And we're going to fly you into Vegas the next morning. Like, no, 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 no. This is not. I mean, I would do that if you give me $5,000. But $800 does not cover my time for the next 14, 15 hours while you stick me in Los Angeles. And I'm in some, you know, airport hotel running around going through the LAX the next day. Not acceptable. So she said, there's nothing we can do. And she started like working. I said, there's always something you can do. God help me, please. So she got Jose on the phone, and Jose said, you know what? There is one seat left on that 6 o'clock flight, and we will get him on. It's in business class. We are going to upgrade Mr. Botchford. We're going to get him on that flight. We're going to get him his $800, and we're going to get him on business class. And I could not have been more, like, I'm still feeling the energy of that experience because I did get my $800. You know, they processed it right away. I did get to go to Vegas on a business class flight with the white tablecloth and the nice tortellini dinner. And I was loving every single. And I got to Vegas a little bit late that night, but I was super happy. I felt pampered and refreshed, and I was ready to go the next day until that loud Vegas arena music started beating me down.
Well, and I was happy for you because you were at the back of the bus on that flight from Atlanta to Minneapolis when I was up front getting the white linen. So, you know, over the course of the season, that one evens out. But I didn't gain $800 to fly. We had to go to Atlanta to get from Columbus to Minnesota. Anyways, good on you. But just as a life lesson here, so was it actual cash in hand? Do they dole out dollar bills or do they write you a check?
Yeah, no, they process the check right there, and then it's on. Like when I get home, it'll be sitting right there in my mailbox. It's all been processed. I've got all the information, all the notifications I need, and it's been already emailed. And so when I get home from this road trip, and it's actually getting me through this road trip, because as bad as the fucking hockey is going to be and has been and was in Vegas, all I kept thinking was, how am I going to spend my $800 when I get home? And I've got a long list of ways to spend that money, man.
That sounds like...
And I hope my wife, I actually told my wife $300. So, said, yeah, I'm taking a later flight. They gave me $300. She said, oh, send me $150. So I'm going to have to send her $150, but the rest... is going, I'm going to slide it right into my jeans.
All right, pod people, this is our little secret. Keep it under wraps. Do not divulge the info that you have just heard here. It is a road trip. There's a hockey game tonight and another one tomorrow and on to Dallas as we work our way, 2.5 weeks to go here. We'll continue to pod through the season and into the off season as well. I guess off season is probably where it starts to get more interesting, the draft lottery, and beyond that, the draft itself. So time is winding down on the season, but the podcast will persevere. We'll come up with another one next week. That's going to do it from Chicago for Box. This is Jeff Patterson, the podcast. Always presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone is a part of their hockey family. Thanks so much for listening. As always, it's going to do it for us from Chicago here on Province Radio.